Hello! Welcome to the Careers for Kids podcast where kids learn careers. This is Maxwell Valencia.
And this is Henry Morrison.
And today, we have Nathan Hartshorn, Conservation Compliance Officer. Hello, Mr. Hartshorn.
Hi, nice to meet you guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much for spending your time to be on Careers for Kids. We have a great interview now. Let's get started! So tell us what you currently do right now.
So, as you said, I am the Conservation Compliance Officer for the town of Westport. It is actually a pretty dynamic job. Of all town hall officials, I probably interact the most with the public. This is for two reasons. One of the biggest chunks of my job, probably the biggest chunk of my job, is when somebody has wetlands or a stream, something like that on their property, and they want to get a pool, they want to get an addition, or they're even just building a whole new house, they need to get permits. So they have to go to the health department if they're on septic to make sure they're not going to damage their septic system. Then they would come to me and make sure that the impact to the wetlands or water course is determined by our conservation commission to be low. And typically that's done with like setbacks or buffer planting. So pools shouldn't be more than 35 feet from a wetland line. And so I review all those permits. I go out to the houses and I look at it, say there's extenuating circumstances, or oh, things aren't as bad as they seem, or why are these trees cut down, something. So I do probably 160 permits a year.
Wow.
Anything from a generator to a new house. The other main aspect of my job is enforcement. And that's when people messed up. And that's the toughest part, because nobody likes being told they messed up. So I might be on one person's property looking at where they want to build a swimming pool, but then I see their neighbor, maybe they chopped down one tree or maybe they chopped down 20 trees and they're all protected trees because they're in the wetlands and trees are very valuable to the wetlands. So that means I have to get them to replace all those trees. And it is difficult. Like I said, people do not want to be told they did anything wrong, and they certainly don't want to spend money to fix it. Removing 20 trees might have cost them $50,000.
Wow. That's a lot of money for some trees. But I know trees, as you said, are just important to the environment and the wetlands.
Yeah.
Right. So you start to develop a sense of how to talk with these people. I'm going to go fix that. I'm going to go plant some new trees. Sometimes they will fight tooth and nail. But you try to work with them, whichever type they are, because getting them to do it, you know, fixes the problem. If they don't do it, that doesn't fix the problem. And trying to make them do it is a very difficult and laborious process. So that is why I say, like, I sometimes meet the most people. I'm doing all these permits. I go do site visits. People in other departments don't do site visits. And then I also have to do all the compliance. And then the newest part of my job this year has been looking for vernal pools, which are, they're like ponds, but they dry up in the summer. So they don't have fish. They're a good habitat for a lot of breeding waterfowl, for amphibians like frogs and salamanders. And so they're their own class of wetlands, and we've never really defined them in Westport. So I've been to probably 200 this spring, but I can't just go on people's property. So if it's town property, I can go. If I have a permit, I can go. But others have to knock on their door and say, hey, can I go look at your wetland? And sometimes they're like, definitely not. Most of the time, they're totally cool. They're really interested, and they want to hear if I found anything. And yeah, you know, I'll come tell them about the frogs or tadpoles I found, if I found any. But so that's sort of the essence of my job. Like I said, it's very difficult, but Meeting all the people can also be a lot of fun. And I think that's a different question, actually, that you have later.
I understand.
So how did you get to this position? I mean, I know you said that this was, like, out of all of, like, the town hall officials, this is probably the one where you most, socialize the most and enjoy meeting the public, as you said, like, you have enjoyed. But how did you just get into, like, the whole, like, town hall kind of thing? Like, there's all these jobs out there. Why did you choose this one?
It's not something I would have expected. It's not something that crossed my mind. I often say one problem I had growing up is that my dad is a professor. My mom was a school teacher. So I had teachers as both my parents. My stepmom's also a professor. My brother's a professor. I didn't have a good background in like the variety of jobs that are out there, and I wanted a totally different career. Not only are my dad, stepmom, and older brother professors, they're all professors of psychology. So yeah, town hall is definitely not something I'd ever thought of. And honestly, I was unemployed. I was working at some random job early in COVID. When COVID hit, the whole field crashed. So I was unemployed and then just looking, and I found some website that was like Connecticut Wetlands. I think it was a Connecticut Association of Wetland Scientists. And they had like career openings. And so I saw a couple. And I applied, and that's literally how I got it. It was no real like intention to go into town hall work. It was just that I found a job, and it fit me because environmental and wetlands, and you know, I've studied wetlands in school, and interviewed and got the job. Here I am, three years, 2 months later.
Congrats. Wow.
So you went from being unemployed to not having a job you enjoy. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty rare, actually. There's like this study, and only 8% of people get to pursue their dream job. Was that your dream job?
No. I will say it's not my dream job. I do like the job. Parts of it I do hate. I mean, it is a job, it is work. Like I said, it's very difficult because I'm like a cop, but without the authority of a cop. So sometimes people, I meet, most of the people I meet are great people. Some of the people I meet are terrible people. And they will lie about me. They will call like Jen Tooker, the first select woman, say, oh, he rang my doorbell 1,000 times. Like, no, I didn't. I rang once. You know, but like just weird stuff that like couldn't possibly happen. So it can be very frustrating. And I'm pretty sure if you guys, I think you guys did interview a cop, police lieutenant, and he'd probably say similar things where like, sometimes no matter how nice you are, some people will be really mean. And that is frustrating, especially when the focus of my job is just to help the environment. And I do get to do a lot of that. But my dream job would probably be creating parks. That is what I came up with this idea when I was 5 years old. I thought, hey, what if we just spent money to buy land and create parks? And as it turns out, there's organizations that do that. The local one for Westport is the Aspetuck Land Trust. I don't know how active they are in creating new ones, but they have various parks. They're owned by the Aspetuck Land Trust. They're not owned by the city or the state. Sometimes they manage city land, but they're a private organization that's a nonprofit that creates land for wildlife and for like hiking on trails. And so that's a little bit closer to my dream job, but it's difficult to do. It tends to pay very, 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 very little. And the whole field is, the field of environmental work is tough because there's not enough jobs really to go around, and people tend to stick for a long time. So like in my office, my boss has been there for 20 years.
Wow.
And there was another woman who'd been there for 35 when I started. She only just retired a half ago. So there's only three positions, and two of them had been held for 17 years when I first started the job. which means there's not a lot of turnover. You know, if somebody wants a job, there's they might get the other job out of the three, but there's not three jobs. So you don't always get exactly what you're looking for, but if you can get at least close, that's cool.
Yeah, so can you dive a little deeper into that? And like, what part of your job do you enjoy the most? And I know you said this, but don't really like other than like the people.
Yeah, so the part I like the most is that sometimes I can really get through to someone. They're really receptive. The one of the big focuses that we have is getting people to plant American plants, and even better if they can plant only New England plants. And that is because they're part of the local ecosystem. It's because the local butterflies need those plants. And what happens is you go to like Europe and they might plant American plants and they don't help the local ecosystem in Europe. And when we plant European plants, they don't help the local ecosystem here. And it's worldwide. It's one of the worst plants in Japan is a plant that I planted in my native garden at Town Hall because it's great here, but it's terrible in Japan. So sometimes I talk to people about this and they get really excited and they go nuts with it. They'll go to the native nursery, they'll buy 50 native plants, which is not cheap. You know, they might have spent $100 and they plant all these wildflowers that are specific just to Connecticut. And then the birds, the bumblebees, the butterflies and moths, everybody just absolutely loves it and really makes their property much more ecologically friendly than just some lawn. And so those are the big ones. And I've had a few wins like that. I've had some people who were like doing it a little bit and I got them to do more. So that happens. And there are other people, like I said, who, you know, part of the problem is when people have violations, rarely do people intend to cause a problem. You know, we're just, you know, living our lives and like, oh, we just thought we'd chop down those trees. And they're not really thinking about it. Rarely do people do with malice. Sometimes they just want lawn, which is useless, but that's the image we're given that, oh, a house should have this big lawn. But then when I tell them they can't in these areas, then they get sometimes, like I said, irate and say very mean things about me, which is very frustrating. But I try, like I said, you try your best to be understanding. And because I don't like when people tell me I did something wrong. But if you, I tell them, look, there's a path forward. We can work with you. There's certain things I can't back off on. I can't say, yes, you can turn the wetlands into a lawn and add dirt and rocks and whatever. But I'm not, you know, I almost never issue a fine. It happens sometimes. Because you're going to have to spend money to fix the problem. So I say, why? What's a fine going to do? But it is difficult. I'm not an aggressive person. Maybe they should have hired somebody who's an aggressive person. But I'm much more of a collaborative work with people person. Some people just are not that and they don't work well with me.
Yeah, I can kind of relate to that in some ways.
So. Yeah. Me too. So I'm here.
I know this wasn't your dream job, but did you ever imagine yourself doing this when you were a kid? Or something like this?
Definitely, I saw myself doing environmental work. I didn't know that this kind of job existed. So I couldn't have imagined myself doing this. I imagined myself, there were like two phases. My first phase was, I thought I'd be a farmer. I grew up in suburban Kansas, but it's a lot like Westport, it's just suburbia. But I always wanted to be a farmer. I love growing stuff. I love being outside. And then I decided that wasn't for me for various reasons. And I thought I'd work for like a national park, whether it's, you know, maintaining trails or doing restoration work, all the stuff that parks need. I thought that'd be really fun. The problem is living in this area, there's not many, you know, big parks. If you drive north of New York City, you can get to some state parks, but there's just not that many. And so like I said, it's not a job that I would have known existed, but it is good that it exists. I don't know if I really emphasized the point earlier. A lot of my job, it's not to really prohibit people from doing work. It's to make the impact of their work less damaging than it would be otherwise. So you still get your pool. It's just, it can't be anywhere you might imagine it to be on property. Okay. Sometimes you have to make it a little bit smaller. Sometimes you have to make it a little bit closer to the house. It doesn't typically end up being much of a problem. There are certain properties in town that just can't get a pool. They're just, you know, they're surrounded by swamp and you just can't put a pool in. But generally speaking, it's about making the impact less, doing smart development. So I think that's a little bit more thorough than I needed to be.
So when you were young, who was like your main idol? Does it have to be related to like natural parks and stuff? But it can just be like an idol. Like my dad, he's like an engineer, but his idol was Michael Jordan.
I never really had an idol, and by never really, I definitely never had an idol. It's not that I don't admire aspects of people, but I think, you know, if you get too infatuated with someone, you're always going to be disappointed. But there are aspects of many people out there that are worth idolizing. When I was looking at that question earlier, I was thinking a lot about it, and you know, when I was your age, Bill Clinton was president, and you know, they put a statue of him in Kosovo because he helped stop the genocide in Kosovo, and that's a really admirable trait. I mean, he didn't actually go fight, you know, he sent troops, but they love him for that, and that is very admirable. But if you look into Bill Clinton, he had also a lot of flaws, and so, you know, if you were to idolize him, you might be very disappointed. So that's always been my belief ever since I was a little kid that I just never idolized anybody, but there were aspects of many people that I thought were worth emulating.
So, Henry, what's your question?
Why? Like, actually, this is kind of a repeat. Oh, never mind. So, what was the biggest highlight of your career?
Sorry, say that again.
What was the biggest highlight of your career?
Biggest highlight of my career might be sort of from a previous job, but also not. So there was a previous job where I did wetlands restoration, where my boss and I, we'd go out, we would, you know, I'd carry 11-foot fence posts through a swamp on each shoulder. We'd dig holes, we'd put the posts in, we'd make a big deer fence to keep the deer out. And we'd fill it with, it might just be like an old dilapidated farm field. We'd fill it with American plants, you know, trees, shrubs, flowers, and then I'd have to maintain it for years. And so I worked that job for a couple of years. Unfortunately, they got a friend of my boss's hired who earned a lot less money than me. And then one day they're like, okay, we're going to save money and get rid of you. Which is the lesson that you never want to kill yourself for a job for a company, because companies will cut you to save a buck. But I went back to one of those places that I worked on for a couple years, and it was great. And I know it was 80% because of my work at that place. And it was really great. Like you could just hear all the birds and the bees, the frogs, everything was just going nuts. And it had been just sort of a rundown, dilapidated farm, just a couple fields bought by the state or county, I don't remember, that were just filled with grass and invasive species. And, you know, we just really restored it. And it's now a thriving wetland.
That's pretty cool. What are the biggest challenges that you think can be solved by our generation that we want to solve for?
There are great opportunities. One difficult and one easy. I mean, they're both difficult to do or to get done, but one is easy to actually do. So the first one that's extra hard is suburban sprawl. Suburban sprawl is taking over like crazy. And like I said, I'm from suburban Kansas City, and it, you know, my high school was surrounded by fields and forest. Now it's surrounded by houses and office buildings, and you have to drive for like 40 minutes to get to the fields. And typically it's not very smart development. And like Westport does not have smart development. It just has houses, you know. If you really think about it, and people generally don't, New York City is a much more environmental place than Westport, or, and I'm not picking on Westport, but like any sort of suburban area, because if you take the population of New York City and the population of Montana, you essentially could take the entire population of Montana, remove all the humans, and put them in just like Staten Island. And then leave all of Montana for wildlife. So like that sort of sprawl is actually really bad for the environment, because you need extra roads to get to the people. You need extra sewer lines to get to the people, because we're all spread out. And so trying to inhibit that is very difficult, because we have a growing population. You know, we have not that high of a birth rate, but it's still high enough that it's more than how many of us die. And then also we have a lot of immigrants, which is great. I'm related to many immigrants, but it's just increasing our population. So we need to find places for people to live. And then when we sprawl out, it is difficult on wildlife. And there are places in Westport where I know owls live, and there are places in Westport where I know owls used to live, but now there's a house because they cleared all the trees and put in a house, and they cleared all the trees. So that's one of the biggest challenges, and that's why, you know, land trusts do a lot of their work, is to say, okay, yeah, we're having this sprawl, but we can still buy some of this land and set aside at least some of the area for wildlife. It's still not enough, and it's very expensive, and people are doing it by donation. The other thing that is difficult to get done but would be easy to do is that if you look in your gardens that your parents have, maybe even you have, very likely none of the plants are going to be American. And again, it's part of the ecosystem. So plants produce chemicals to make themselves inedible. As humans, we can eat a lot of different plants. We're it's one of the reasons we took over. We can do that. Most animals can't. Most caterpillars need specific plants. And if you don't have caterpillars, obviously you don't have butterflies. Also, if you don't have caterpillars, you don't have birds, because most baby birds eat caterpillars as babies, right? And so if you don't have American plants, you don't have the caterpillars, you don't have baby birds, you don't have butterflies, you don't have moths. And it would be so easy to just buy only American. The problem is, you go to Home Depot, you go to Lowe's, you go to Walmart, you go to almost any nursery around, and almost everything they have is going to be European, East Asian, and sometimes African. And all their plants are great for their ecosystems, and the American plants are terrible for their ecosystems. It's just that the American animals are evolved for the American plants. European animals are evolved for European plants, and so on and so forth. And if we just got everybody to plant only American, even though we have suburban sprawl, their gardens are going to be full of wildlife. So there are nurseries that focus on American plants, very few. There's one in Fairfield, a native plant nursery. I think it's anativeplantnursery.com. I went there and bought a plant there myself. Most of my natives I have like 500 pots of natives, and I give them away for free. You kids want some, you know, send me an email. I give them away for free just to help get people to plant American plants. And that is definitely, again, it'd be easy. You're going to have a garden? Well, put in American plants. It's just that people don't know. A lot of my job really is about educating people. And people don't know about this, or they know a little bit about it, but really not enough. They don't understand how important it is, because they've never really done the math. If you look at every single garden around, and you realize every single garden has only non-American plants, you start doing the math. It is a lot of European, Asian, African plants in Connecticut. And they're beautiful. They're often very beautiful. And I would love to go to those countries or those continents and see the plants there. is just ends up being detrimental to our wildlife. And if we're going to have sprawl, we need our gardens to have American plants. So that is a big challenge. You guys can definitely do it. I'm going to keep working on it too, though.
If someone wants to follow in your footsteps and your career, what would you tell him or her?
So when I was a much younger man, they basically said and this wasn't true anymore, but they said, you know, you graduate from college, you get an internship somewhere and then they'll hire you. That was no longer the case though. But it used to be the case. You get an internship, they hire you, you know, you start your career there through that internship. Now, if you get an internship somewhere, they're like, thank you for your cheap labor or even free labor. Tell us how you do, you know, and then you have to go. So it's a lot harder to get jobs. And I sort of referenced that earlier. Turnover is very low. There's not really enough jobs in this field. And so the other side of that is experience matters more than education. I have a master's degree from an Ivy League school. I had three majors in undergrad. Nobody ever really cared about that. They cared, what was my experience? What's my knowledge base from doing actual work? And there's good reasons for that. You know, a lot of my job, I didn't learn in school. I didn't know about the permitting process in school. I mean, nobody does. Now I'm very familiar. If I was to apply for another job and say, oh, how familiar with like government permitting, I'd say, well, in Westport, I'm quite knowledgeable. So now, I mean, this was even 10 years ago. I was talking with some people in undergrad. My ex-girlfriend's little sister was in my field in undergrad, and they all knew they needed an internship every single summer. So it wasn't you graduate, get an internship, get a job. No, you're a freshman in college, get an internship that summer. You're a sophomore, get an internship that summer. Junior, get an internship. Now we have high school interns. We have high school interns in town hall. Usually seniors, I think, sometimes juniors, you know, when you guys make it that far, there's a lot of neat internships out there. If they're not long, they're only like 2 weeks, but experience is the thing that matters the most. So you need as many internships as you can get. And then also when you graduate, take any job you can get. When I first had my master's degree, I was like, well, you know, I got this master's degree. Maybe I don't need to take the 3 month job that is pure labor. Turns out I should have. I didn't take it, but I ended up doing it, you know, later on. It's just they want the experience. So you need to keep doing internships, and no job is too low of a job. You got to do them all.
Excellent. Out of your entire life, what is your main advice for kids listening to this podcast, just like generally?
Sorry, say that again.
So out of your entire life, what is your main life advice for kids listening to this podcast, like in general?
You know, you won't like this answer. I think it's probably more honest than the other ones you would get, but these days you got to earn money.
Yeah.
You got to earn money. It's so expensive. The house that I grew up in is now 5 times what it cost when my mom got it. I earned twice what my mom earned, but I don't earn 5 times as much. It's very hard to earn 5 times as much. I'm not that old. It's part because, I mean, there's everybody's trying to squeeze every dollar they can. So, you know, cars got really expensive. The car companies say, well, it's inflation, but it's not actually inflation because they're making huge profits. They are the inflation. They're just charging more. Car parts, they're just saying that they're more expensive. I held on to my car as long as I could, but eventually I had to buy a new one. It's old, it's used. And my income, I think, is fine. You know, I don't complain, oh, Westport should pay me more. But I definitely can't afford to live in Westport. I can't afford to live anywhere close. And it's only getting worse. The prices of everything is just going astronomical. And again, like I said, it's because everybody's trying to squeeze every dollar they can. All the Airbnb, all the houses for rent, the apartments for rent, the condos for rent, that increases demand, which increases the price. And technically, you know, I don't blame a single person who has a second home that they rent the second home, but it does make it more expensive for everybody else. They are by definition owning a home they can't even live in. which is seemed like kind of a waste. Mm-hmm. There are good reasons to rent sometimes, but it makes everything expensive. So honestly, I would have gone for a career where I would have made more money. I could have done finance. I'm great at math.
Me too.
I could have earned a lot of money, and then I could have bought some land. I could have bought a forest and just protected that whole forest and just said, eh. Whereas now I have to really work hard to save money in order to rent an apartment.
Sorry, continue.
Okay, yeah. It's just so it's very unfortunate. So honestly, because money's so dominant and because things are getting so expensive, and because my house is 5 times more expensive than when I was your age, which is not that long ago. It's like you really just need the money. So I would recommend, it doesn't have to be finance, engineering. You can make a lot of money. There's a lot of business stuff you can do. It's you know, honestly, 4-year degrees. You don't even have master's degrees like I did. You just get your 4-year degree, you go on the right business, and you can make good money. It's not necessarily as rewarding as my career, but if you have that much money, you can do rewarding things with it. You can donate to a land trust. You can donate to soup kitchens. You can volunteer your time, which is even more rewarding, and do stuff with that money that actually helps. So the job itself might be a pain, but you can do so much good that you'll still enjoy. You'll say, well, here at work, I'm not doing the good thing, but really, because of the money I'm earning, I just saved bald eagle habitat in Connecticut.
Thank you so much for allowing us to interview you, and to whoever's listening.